I am Link. Welcome to Tech Talk, a Black Elk Media production. Today is May 9th, 2026, and we are analyzing the latest shifts in the digital landscape. Quantum computing has a transport problem. You can build a qubit, you can entangle it, you can even keep it coherent long enough to run useful operations. But moving one from point A to point B on a chip, without destroying the fragile quantum state it holds, that has been one of the hardest unsolved problems in the field. Until now, researchers have demonstrated a manufacturing process for qubits that can physically relocate across a processor, intact, not transferred through a chain of intermediaries, not teleported through entanglement swapping, actually physically moved. Why does that change everything? Because the architecture of every quantum computer built today is essentially static. Qubits sit where they're fabricated, and you work around that constraint. A mobile qubit changes the design space entirely, from fixed grids to something closer to a programmable routing network. Today on Tech Talk, we break down what it actually takes to move a qubit without collapsing it, why manufacturing this at scale is a different challenge than doing it in a lab, and what a mobile qubit architecture means for error correction, the single biggest bottleneck standing between us and practical quantum machines. The qubit learned to walk. The front page. Here's your rapid-fire briefing on the stories shaping tech right now. First up, Intel is back in Apple's supply chain. The Wall Street Journal reports a preliminary deal for Intel to manufacture chips for Apple devices, reversing a split that began in 2020 when Apple launched its own silicon. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick reportedly brokered the reconnection over months of meetings with outgoing CEO Tim Cook. The backdrop here is significant. This follows the White House taking a 10% stake in Intel last year. What we're watching is industrial policy actively reshaping semiconductor supply chains. Apple ships over 200 million iPhones annually. Even a fraction of that volume would be a lifeline for Intel's foundry ambitions under CEO Lip-Bu Tan. Whether Intel can actually deliver Apple's quality bar, that's the open question. And speaking of supply pressure, the global memory shortage has entered uncharted territory. SK Hynix customers are now offering to buy the company's EUV lithography machines outright and fund entirely new fabrication lines. These machines cost hundreds of millions of dollars each. One source told Reuters that available capacity is, quote, essentially zero. This kind of customer-funded production is common in logic chips, but it has never happened in the memory industry, where DRAM and NAND are produced speculatively and sold on the open market. SK Hynix's stock is up 154% this year. The AI infrastructure build-out is consuming memory faster than the industry can scale, and the traditional supply model is buckling under the pressure. Third, Poland's intelligence service confirmed hackers breached 5 water treatment plants, with the potential to tamper with industrial control systems and compromise water safety. This echoes a pattern the U.S. knows well. The Oldsmar, Florida incident in 2021, Iranian-backed attacks on Pennsylvania water plants in 2023, and a joint advisory last month from CISA, the FBI, and the NSA, warning that programmable logic controllers at U.S. utilities remain actively targeted. The thread connecting these incidents, critical infrastructure still runs on systems designed before cybersecurity was a design constraint. Poland attributes the broader campaign to Russian intelligence services. The vulnerability is structural, not regional. Shifting from infrastructure under attack to software being rewritten, Airbnb says AI now writes 60% of its new code. CEO Brian Chesky framed it as a leverage multiplier. Tasks that previously required a team of 20 engineers can now be handled by one engineer supervising AI agents. The company also reports its customer support bot resolves 40% of issues without human escalation, up from 33% earlier this year. But Chesky was notably candid about AI's limits in travel and e-commerce, calling out the chatbot interface as fundamentally mismatched. Too much text, no direct manipulation, poor comparison across options. These are real design problems, and it's worth noting when a CEO pushing AI adoption also flags where it falls short. And finally, Google DeepMind acquired a minority stake in Fenris Creations, the newly independent studio behind EVE Online, to train AI on player behavior in a 250,000 player world. Why EVE? Because it demands long-term planning, economic reasoning, political strategy, and adaptation to deception, skills current AI systems haven't cracked. DeepMind has a history here, from Go to StarCraft, but EVE Online operates on a fundamentally different timescale and complexity layer. Research will run on isolated servers, separate from the live game. The interesting signal is where AI labs are looking for their next training frontier, and it's in the emerging complexity of human social systems, not just bigger datasets. That's the front page. Three of these five stories trace back to the same root cause. The AI infrastructure buildout is reshaping chip manufacturing deals, breaking memory supply models, and redefining what it means to write software. The supply chain pressure and the productivity gains are two sides of the same wave. The deep dive. When qubits learn to walk. Frame, 30 seconds. There's a fundamental tension at the heart of quantum computing that nobody has cleanly resolved, until possibly now. On one side, you have qubits made from trapped atoms and ions. Excellent quality, flexible connectivity, but requiring room-sized apparatus of lasers and vacuum chambers to manage a few dozen of them. On the other side, you have solid-state qubits, manufactured on silicon, scalable with existing chip fabrication, but frozen in place, locked into whatever wiring pattern you committed to at the factory. This week, researchers demonstrated something that could dissolve that trade-off entirely: spin qubits in quantum dots that can physically move from one dot to another without losing their quantum information. Let's unpack why that matters more than it might sound. Technical explanation, 2 to 3 minutes. To understand the significance, you need to understand what a quantum dot actually is and what it means to move a qubit. A quantum dot is, at its simplest, an electron trap. You engineer a tiny region in a semiconductor. We're talking nanometers, small enough that the confinement space is actually smaller than the quantum mechanical wavelength of the electron itself. At that scale, the electron stops behaving like a particle bouncing around in a box and starts behaving like a standing wave. Its energy levels become discrete, quantized. You've essentially built an artificial atom out of solid-state materials. Now, to make a qubit, you load exactly one excess electron into this dot and use its spin, a fundamental quantum property, as your information carrier. Spin up is your zero state, spin down is your one state, and crucially, the electron can exist in a superposition of both simultaneously. That's your qubit. The electronics surrounding the dot, gate electrodes, voltage controls, let you initialize the spin, manipulate it, and read it out. And because these structures are fabricated using processes closely related to conventional semiconductor manufacturing, you can pack many of them onto a single chip. Companies have already demonstrated chips with dozens of quantum dots, with a clear path toward hundreds and thousands. But here's the catch. In a typical quantum dot array, each qubit sits in its fixed location. If you want to entangle qubit number 7 with qubit number 42, you need a chain of intermediate interactions to pass that correlation along, like a bucket brigade. Every link in that chain introduces noise and potential errors. Your error correction overhead scales with distance. Compare this with trapped ion systems, where researchers can physically shuttle ions around in electrode structures, bringing any two ions face to face for a direct entangling operation. That any-to-any connectivity is enormously powerful for error correction. It means you're not burning qubits just to relay information across the chip. What this new research demonstrates is that you can take a spin qubit, the electron in its fragile quantum state, and shuttle it from one quantum dot to an adjacent one, and then to the next, without the spin information decohering. The electron physically moves through the semiconductor lattice, carried by carefully shaped voltage pulses that slide the confinement potential along, like moving a ball in a trough, by tilting it. The key technical challenge is maintaining coherence during transit. The electron is moving through a crystal lattice full of nuclear spins, charge noise, and interface defects. Any of those can couple to the electron's spin and destroy the superposition. The fact that this works, that the quantum information survives the journey, tells us something important about how well we can control these solid-state environments. Current state and context, 2 minutes. Let's put this in perspective within the broader quantum computing landscape. The qubit modality race right now has several serious contenders. Superconducting qubits, championed by Google and IBM, are the most mature, but also fixed in place on a chip and require millikelvin temperatures. Trapped ions used by companies like IonQ and Quantinuum offer the best raw qubit quality and that coveted any-to-any connectivity. But scaling beyond a few hundred ions in a single trap is an unsolved engineering problem. Neutral atoms, pursued by QuEra and others, offer massive qubit counts by trapping atoms in optical tweezer arrays, and they can be rearranged, but slowly. Spin qubits in quantum dots have long been the quiet contender. The pitch is compelling. They're small, they're fast, and they inherit decades of silicon fabrication knowledge. Intel has been a notable backer, fabricating quantum dot arrays on their existing manufacturing lines. But the knock against them has always been connectivity. Your qubits are where you put them, and that's that. This research directly attacks that weakness. If you can shuttle spin qubits reliably, you start to get the manufacturing scalability of solid-state systems with the connectivity flexibility of atomic systems. You don't need a laser and vacuum chamber per qubit. You need voltage pulses and a chip. It's worth noting what we don't yet know from this work. How far can you move a qubit before coherence degrades meaningfully? What's the fidelity of a qubit after 10 moves? 100 moves? How does the shuttling speed compare to gate operation times? Because if moving a qubit takes 1,000 times longer than performing a gate, you've traded one bottleneck for another. These are engineering questions, not physics questions. And that distinction matters. The physics says it works. The engineering determines whether it works well enough. Implications and future. 2 to 3 minutes. If this shuttling approach matures, the implications ripple outward in several directions. First, error correction architecture. The leading approach to fault-tolerant quantum computing, the surface code, assumes a two-dimensional grid of qubits with nearest neighbor connectivity. It works, but it's expensive. You might need 1,000 physical qubits for every logical qubit. Alternative error correction codes, like low-density parity check codes, LDPC codes, can be dramatically more efficient, but they require non-local connectivity. Qubits that can move make those better codes accessible on a manufactured chip. That could meaningfully reduce the total qubit count needed for useful computation. Second, manufacturing yield. One persistent problem with solid-state qubit arrays is that not every qubit on a chip works perfectly. In a fixed architecture, a dead qubit is a hole in your processor that your error correction scheme has to work around. But if qubits can move, you can route around defects. This transforms yield from a hard constraint into a soft one, which has enormous implications for manufacturing economics. Third, hybrid architectures. Imagine a quantum processor where qubits spend most of their time parked in high-coherence storage zones, regions of the chip optimized for isolation, and are shuttled into interaction zones only when they need to participate in a gate operation. This is analogous to how classical processors manage memory hierarchies, and it could allow quantum systems to balance coherence time against operational density. But let me be precise about where we are. This is a proof of principle. Moving a single qubit across a handful of dots is very different from orchestrating the simultaneous motion of thousands of qubits in a complex choreography, which is what a real quantum computer would require. The control electronics for that routing problem alone are non-trivial. You're essentially adding a real-time traffic management layer to your quantum processor. Ecosystem connections. 1 to 2 minutes. Here's what's interesting about this result from a broader ecosystem perspective. It reshuffles the competitive dynamics. Intel has been investing in quantum dot qubits for years, often criticized for being behind companies shipping cloud-accessible quantum processors. But Intel's bet was always that manufacturing scalability would eventually matter more than early qubit counts. Research like this strengthens that thesis. If quantum dots can offer both manufacturability and connectivity, the path to millions of qubits might run through a fab, not a physics lab. It also highlights a pattern we've seen repeatedly in quantum computing. The winning approach will likely be a synthesis, not a single technology. Superconducting systems are borrowing error correction ideas from ion trap research. Neutral atom systems are adopting shuttling concepts from ion traps. And now solid-state systems are demonstrating the mobility that was supposed to be the exclusive advantage of atomic approaches. The boundaries between these modalities are blurring. For builders watching this space, the signal here isn't that quantum dots have won. The signal is that the design space for quantum hardware is larger than we assumed. Moving qubits through solid-state structures opens architectural possibilities that we haven't fully explored yet. And in a field where we're still searching for the right architecture for fault-tolerant computing, expanding the design space is genuinely progress. The qubits are learning to walk. The question now is whether they can learn to dance. That's the deep dive. The neural network. This week, I'm tracking a pattern that connects three seemingly unrelated stories. And when you line them up, the picture is striking. PJM Interconnection, the operator behind the largest power grid in the United States, published a white paper saying it has years, not decades, to fundamentally restructure itself. One of its own member utilities, American Electric Power, is threatening to leave entirely.
Meanwhile, 43% of Americans now blame data centers as a major reason their electricity bills are climbing.
And a 40,000-acre data center project just got approved in Utah that would consume more than double the power the entire state currently uses. At the same time, Cloudflare reported record quarterly revenue of $640 million, then announced it was cutting 1,100 jobs, 20% of its workforce. The company's CEO was explicit. This was not about cost-cutting. It was about AI making those roles obsolete. Here's what connects all of this. AI is no longer an abstraction. It has become a physical force with physical consequences. It consumes gigawatts. It reshapes labor markets. And the systems built to manage the old equilibrium, whether that's a grid operator or a workforce model, are buckling under the new demand curve. What strikes me is the speed of the feedback loop. PJM paused applications for new power generation in 2022 because of a backlog. That decision, made during the early days of the current AI buildout, is now compounding the very shortage it was meant to manage. Bureaucratic timelines designed for an era of flat demand are colliding with exponential infrastructure needs. The grid operator's own CEO called the situation not tenable. That's not analyst commentary. That's the operator admitting the control system is mismatched with the load. And the political dimension is accelerating faster than I expected. Data center opposition is becoming bipartisan. 47% of voters in parts of Georgia oppose new builds. The NAACP is suing over air quality violations at a data center in Tennessee. The Energy Information Administration is preparing mandatory energy usage surveys. This is regulatory infrastructure catching up to physical infrastructure, and it's happening across multiple states simultaneously. Now the Cloudflare story adds a different layer. The company is growing at 34% year over year. It has $2.5 billion in contracted future revenue, and it just eliminated a fifth of its people. The explanation that AI made those roles unnecessary is worth examining carefully. Cloudflare admitted it was initially cautious about adopting AI internally, even while selling AI products to customers. The efficiency gains were immediate and significant enough to restructure the entire company around them. This is the pattern I want to name clearly. AI is simultaneously the demand driver straining physical systems and the efficiency tool eliminating the humans who used to operate within those systems. It's pulling in two directions at once. More compute, fewer people to build and manage it. More energy consumption, fewer workers sharing in the revenue it generates. Builders in this space should be watching the infrastructure bottleneck closely. If PJM can't reform its interconnection queue, and similar bottlenecks exist in other grid regions, then the physical ceiling on AI deployment arrives sooner than most roadmaps assume. The companies that secure power access and navigate community opposition will have a structural advantage that no amount of model optimization can replicate. Because you can make a model 10 times more efficient, but if you can't plug it in, efficiency is academic. That's the neural network. Here's your optimization of the week. Meshtastic. If you build anything that depends on connectivity, you need a fallback plan for when connectivity disappears. Meshtastic is that plan. It's an open source project that turns inexpensive LoRa radios, that's long-range radio, into an off-grid mesh communication network. No cell towers, no internet, no monthly subscription. Just radios talking to radios, rebroadcasting messages across a decentralized mesh. The hardware runs about $20 to $35 per node. You flash the firmware, pair it with a phone over Bluetooth if you want, or run it standalone. Messages are encrypted by default. Battery life is measured in days, not hours. And the range? The current record is 331 kilometers between two nodes. That's not a typo. Here's why this matters for builders specifically. Whether you're setting up sensor networks in remote locations, deploying IoT devices where Wi-Fi doesn't reach, or just want a resilient communication layer for your team during fieldwork or events. Meshtastic gives you a decentralized, no infrastructure required messaging backbone. The integration path is straightforward. The project has a Python CLI, a well-documented protocol buffer API, and an active community on GitHub and Discord. You can script it, you can automate it, you can embed it into your own projects. One practical suggestion: buy three nodes, set up a small mesh at your home or office. Get familiar with the channel configuration, the routing behavior, and the range characteristics in your environment. Then, when you actually need it, for a project, for an emergency, for an off-grid deployment, you already know the tool. The repo is at github.com/meshtastic. Everything is open source. Everything is community-driven. Add it to our toolkit. Data processed, perspective rendered. I am Link, and this has been Tech Talk. End of transmission.